Coming up today, the UK is rushing a worrying surveillance law through Parliament, Microsoft is slashing thousands of jobs, and a Panamanian dictator isn't happy about how he's been portrayed in Call of Duty. We'll also be discussing the widely reported HIV cure that didn't actually work, and an artist who's been arrested for selling 3D printing files of her lady bits. All that and more coming up. The Wired.co.uk podcast, your weekly guide to the important and the interesting, from science and tech to 3D printed lady bits and disgruntled dictators. I'm your host, Olivia Solon. I'm the deputy editor of Wired.co.uk.
I'm Leanne Clark.
And I'm Katie Collins.
And I think this might be the last lady trio podcast for a while.
Wowza.
Fingers crossed, Nate will be back next week. So that's very, very exciting. We can't wait to have him back. Another thing to mention is we've just announced the inaugural Wired Innovation Fellows, and they are awesome. If you don't know what this is, it's a scheme we launched earlier this year to try and find 12 people that are doing things that are going to have an interesting impact on the world, whether that's in science, tech, design, business. And we've picked them. There's 12 of them, and they're going to get access to all of our events. They are going to speak on stage at our events. We're going to write about them, and they're going to get mentorship from the Wired Network where possible. Just to give you a few of the names, we've got Nelly Ben-Hayoun, who is the director of the International Space Orchestra.
Wow.
She's super cool.
Awesome.
I interviewed her.
Skylar Tibbet, who is the director of the Self-Assembly Lab in MIT's Department of Architecture. Also wow.
Yeah.
And Joel Jackson, who is a British social entrepreneur who founded a car company called Mobius Motors and then moved to Kenya to design, manufacture and sell affordable off-road vehicles. You can see the rest of the list if you just search on the website for Wired Innovation Fellows, but there's some fantastic people, and if you don't already know them, you probably should. But let's get on with the news. Leah, some slightly worrying legislation is being rushed through Parliament as we speak, and it's called DRIP.
Absolutely. Terrible name, and it's really not as pathetic as it might sound. It's actually a very ballsy law, which is basically just UK putting two fingers up to Europe. It's called the Data Retention and Investigatory Powers Law, which is why we call it DRIP. Terrible name. This effectively has now been passed by the House of Commons, and the law essentially dictates that communications companies must store your data for up to 12 months in case security services need it. So email, phone records, text, all the metadata must be stored. And apparently there's a clause relating to any remote storage on top of that. So there have been suggestions that it could be expanded to cloud storage. So we had rumours of this last week. I think The Guardian first picked it up, that there was going to be an emergency surveillance law pushed through. Now, the reason this has happened is because actually the UK has been doing this for years. Mm. They've already been forcing telecommunications companies to retain this data under an EU directive from 2006. That directive actually said they could store it for up to 2 years, so even longer. But quite a few people challenged it. It went to the European Court of Justice, and they essentially said it infringed on European citizens' right to privacy and was therefore illegal, and we should stop doing it. So, you know, that happened back in April. Why the emergency, UK government? Why?
They've got to go on holiday.
Yes, they're going on holiday 22nd of July for once. So they've left it right to the last minute. House of Commons was looking particularly empty when they debated it. And to be fair, it really wasn't much of a debate. The rumours began then last Thursday, kind of second week into July. The draft bill finally went up online. MPs could look at it. They had a couple of days to digest something that we've known about since April. And apparently, really, one of the reasons this has happened is because the UK just ignored the European Court of Justice's ruling completely, carried on doing what they were doing. And people
need to have a get-out clause, right?
Yeah.
This is like covering our bodies.
Covering our bodies, no end, because people actually started to do something about it and take these cases to the High Court and say, hey, government, shouldn't you really be following the law? So that's why they've pushed it through. To worry anyone even more, only 49 MPs voted against it and said that they wanted more debate. So something like 470 voted for it immediately. And of course, this is under, you know, I'm not going to say the pretense. It's for security. This is for security. It's always been for security. It's to protect us. It's also to justify mass surveillance, which Europe has now said is effectively illegal. Upside? Do you want to know if there's an upside to it?
Yeah.
It's pretty. It seems pretty unnerving to see the government push this through. I think that's partially why everyone was quite upset about it last week. Mm. No one knew about it, and it seems like a very important thing to justify all the surveillance we found out about. But they are apparently going to set up a board to monitor its impact on privacy and civil liberties. At least there's that. There's going to be an annual transparency report, and they're going to review REAPER, which is a controversial law all around surveillance and security services, a whole set of laws which allows them to do whatever they want. But of course, people are worried that it might be extended over time. We had the Snoopers Charter, which was kind of thrown out, which would extend it to like tracking your internet usage, recording everything.
But this is the Snoopers Charter by another name.
Well, no, the Snoopers Charter went further, I believe. Like, this is metadata. But let's face it, they've basically been making noises since that was thrown out, since April, that there's no way, shape or form that they're going to listen to this. Like, several MPs on the cabinet had said, you know, this is going to happen. There wasn't really a question of whether it wasn't going to happen. But 2016, we get to review the law. Yay!
Yeah, well, I thought that was what's a bit confusing, because we've been talking about the fact that perhaps even REAPER in and of itself isn't legal. I was going to say constitutional, but yeah, isn't legal according to European law.
Yeah.
And we're still going to have that discussion, but at the same time, we're rushing through another law that will, you know, offer up similar powers.
Yeah, it even expands REAPER's powers a bit. I mean, this was originally, like, the UK's original law was mainly, it was UK companies. This is now expanded so that they can force non-UK companies to maintain data. So they've actually expanded on it, despite saying, yes, we're going to review REAPER, blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, who knows?
So it's now being discussed by the old fuddy-duddies in the House of Lords.
Yeah,
and they generally just pass stuff through.
Exactly.
Right?
I mean, I'd love it if they revolted, but and said, "Hey guys, this is not okay. Let's talk more." But I'm not sure that will happen.
It does feel a little bit like this could just be a kind of legal, as I said, body covering requirement in the interim before they can have a proper debate. But it does. It still feels it sits uncomfortably.
Yeah, and it feels bizarre to have an interim and not just have a proper debate, because I mean, since April they could have had a proper debate. They could have carried on using the law, which they've done anyway, but in that they could have used that time to have a debate, or they could cancel their summer holidays.
Yes,
they get a ridiculous amount of holiday.
Well, that's another issue altogether, which I'm sure we could all discuss. Teachers and MPs. I'll give teachers, I think, fully within their rights to have that long holiday. But
absolutely.
MPs, I mean, what the hell are you doing?
I'm really not okay with that. They could spend the whole summer thrashing out privacy versus surveillance and really, you know, nailing that tough topic.
If you're listening, I'd be interested to hear. Are you an MP? Do we have any MPs listening? It'd be awesome if we did.
Yes.
If you are an MP and you're listening, are you going to be working over the summer? Please let us know on podcast@wired.co.uk. The second piece of news is one we've been sort of expecting for a while, and that is that Microsoft is going to be laying off quite a few people. Katie?
Yes, that's right. It's sad times at Microsoft, or at least worrying times so far. They're about to announce the biggest job cuts in 5 years. And it could happen today, which might be yesterday by the time you're listening, or sometime over the next week. But yeah, this kind of comes after Microsoft's acquisition of Nokia earlier this year. And when they acquired Nokia, the company got an extra 30,000 employees, bringing the total to about 130,000.
Yeah.
So
probably a bit of duplication.
Exactly.
In there.
So the people that are most at risk, as you might imagine, are the kind of the people where there's most crossover. So it's been said that the people that need to worry are those working in engineering and marketing.
Surely that's pretty much sums up the technology company.
Yes. We've been expecting it for a while, and actually, it turns out that not all of the job losses are going to occur within Nokia, which is a relief.
Okay.
But some will actually happen in the UK, we think, because the global Xbox team is based here for the European region in Reading. So it's possible that, people in the UK might lose their jobs as well, which is obviously very sad. So we know this because it's kind of come from a report by Bloomberg, who've corroborated the rumours with people familiar with the matter, which usually means someone they know in the company.
Yes.
But also Satya Nadella, who's Microsoft's CEO, said in an interview last week that there would be sweeping changes coming very soon. And he didn't specifically say that there would be job cuts, but it's likely that these job cuts will happen as part of a larger kind of cultural change that's about to take place in Microsoft.
Mm.
We think where they're going to focus more on mobile, they're going to slim the company down, make it a leaner machine. And
that means getting rid of a lot of people.
Yes, it does. So we know that Microsoft are going to release the quarterly fiscal results on the 22nd of July, at which point Nadella has promised there will be more announcements about the future of Microsoft. But it's also likely that the job cuts will be announced before that happens. So
okay.
Microsoft and Nokia employees have a good reason to be very nervous right now. But it was probably inevitable, really, that these cuts were going to happen.
Will they get a nice pay packet? I'm sure they will.
I'm sure
they'll go immediately to a competitor.
Yes.
And say, screw you.
Yeah.
Now, there's been an interesting legal case that has emerged this week, and it relates to the former Panamanian dictator Manuel Noriega. Now, he ruled Panama during the 1980s, and he's actually taking legal action against Call of Duty creator Activision over his representation in the game. Now, Manuel is currently in prison in Panama for crimes that he committed during his time in power.
He did quite a lot of naughty stuff, didn't he?
There have been quite a few crimes. He spent time in the US in prison and now in Panama for crimes including drug trafficking, racketeering, money laundering and murder of opponents during his reign. Now, in Call of Duty Black Ops 2, he features as a character and is portrayed as helping the CIA to capture a drug lord, but then he ends up betraying the CIA to help the drug lord, and that's a kind of little subplot within the story.
So what's his argument? Like, I do not betray people. I might be a murderer. I might be a drug trafficker.
So his lawyers, because obviously he's in prison, have filed the lawsuit, and they complain that he's been portrayed as a kidnapper, murderer and enemy of the state responsible for numerous fictional crimes. And it also says that they've included his likeness to help boost sales of the game. Now, what I will agree with is that they didn't get his consent to use his likeness. So I can see why you'd have a case. Mm. You know, you're a character in a game. People are using your image, but they haven't asked for your consent. But what I do think is quite funny is he's complaining about these fictional crimes when the real crimes he's committed are just as bad,
so
if not worse.
If they'd done the real ones, everything would be fine.
I don't think so. I do wonder how, if he'd been a bit, he might have had a less strong case if the whole game was very historically accurate. It was more of a kind of reporting on the facts. But you think you would still, if you were selling it, have to get someone's consent maybe to use their image.
And it's definitely him. It's not like Lindsay Lohan saying that girl in a bikini in, what was it, Grand Theft Auto looks a lot like me.
No, it is definitely him. He's named.
I mean, I suppose it's difficult because it's not like it's going to do him any more reputational damage.
No, that's true.
Because he's already pretty much destroyed his reputation on his own.
Yeah, but and then he's again, 80 and he's in prison.
Yeah, but then again, they're just kind of sort of generalising the kind of person you are and making you commit fictional crimes that actually you've got nothing to do with, I suppose.
That's called artistic licence. Also, I think this is definitely a pretext to him launching his own game.
I would love to see that.
He's going to have a comeback, and I think it's going to be game related.
He'll probably hire some of the old Microsoft guys fired and set up a new game
studio. This is the best guerrilla PR ever. Guerrilla PR. He wasn't involved in guerrilla.
Now, the final piece of news, and I can't quite believe I'm even saying this, is the second fitness tracker for your lady bit. Another one. We spoke about one last week, I think, in our discussion session. Another one has launched.
Yes, that's right. So I know we already talked about one piece of technology that's designed for strengthening pelvic floor muscles, but there is another. And this one actually turns the whole process into a game. Now, it seems to me that increasingly technology manufacturers are looking not only at trying to persuade us to buy stuff, but also incentivizing us to use them once we've bought them. So hence this being a game. Apparently 80% of women fail to complete the proper pelvic floor exercises that they're supposed to do. It's really important that you have kind of strong pelvic floor muscles for all sorts of reasons, particularly later in life after you've had children. And
yeah, I mean, I think we said this last week, but both men and women have them. It's important to have strong pelvic floor muscles for back strength and for kind of keeping continent. But for women, it's more of an issue, particularly after childbirth, when they get very weakened. And so this is why these products are generally aimed at women. In fact, they are aimed at women because there's no way a man could insert them.
Although frank, I wouldn't be surprised if someone had tried. So this particular piece of technology is called Skia, which stands for Smart Kegel Exercise Aid. And it involves sliding a small sensor-packed device into your lady parts and connecting it to an app. The wearer then has to sort of clench using their pelvic floor muscles, and the app kind of picks it up from the sensor. So there's at the moment, Skia is using a prototype game, which is called, I think rather geniusly, Alice Incontinent. I don't know if you...
She's in a continent. Well, not incontinent.
Incontinent.
Oh.
She's not in Wonderland. She's in continent.
Oh, Alice.
So the way the game works is you need to kind of jump around and dodge obstacles and collect points. And you have a sort of avatar on screen. And in order to control your avatar, rather than tilting the phone or anything like that, you clench your pelvic floor muscles.
Actually sounds quite tricky.
It's been compared to Temple Run.
That's
according to people who've kind of tested it and given it the trial run.
So it's a simple mechanism. Clench to jump.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unclench.
But like you might have to do rapidly.
I know.
Clench.
Yeah.
Fast.
I'm doing it right now.
Do you know what? This is an excellent game because I only do it when we talk about it.
So, you'll be investing.
So, yeah. Well, I mean, most women, like, who does it regularly? Who actually thinks to do it? So
exactly.
I think it's a great idea.
I think that's kind of the point of creating this game. So you've got a reason to practice other than the obvious. Mm. But this isn't the only game. They're actually looking at developing more games. And one includes a simplified Flappy Bird style game.
Oh my gosh, Angry Birds.
they also said,
so you
Angry
like
Birds.
Clench for a long time and then let go.
Yeah.
At the right moment.
How would you angle it?
I just need an
accelerometer in the device.
It wouldn't be very easy to play on the tube if you were had to sort of tilt everywhere.
You could just like,
yeah.
That was me maybe pushing my pelvis up.
Maybe in the privacy of your own home.
Yeah,
you could but tilt around.
We should also say they're thinking of introducing Oculus Rift into the experience.
I would love to know how this is going to work. They're going to create an augmented reality.
Virtual reality.
Yeah, virtual reality.
I just don't feel like that could work because we'll be too focused on the real world below.
Maybe if you could see something going on down below in the
but what are you going to see?
I don't know.
Octopus. I don't know why that came to mind, but controlling a giant octopus.
Okay, well, I would be very interested to find out how that might work. But what games do you think we should be creating that use this clench mechanism as the key controller? I would love to hear. Men and women, be as creative as you like and do tell us on podcast@wired.co.uk.
You'd clench to put your tentacles together and go up.
I think, how about Candy Crush, but a different kind of crushing?
So that's all the news we have for this week. But still to come, a girl that was thought to have been cured of HIV has relapsed. And we discuss the legal issues faced by a woman who makes 3D printed objects in the shape of, you guessed it, her lady bits.
Do you want a free audiobook? You probably do since you're listening to our podcast. Audible.co.uk is offering every listener of the Wired.co.uk podcast any book from its catalogue of 80,000, including the latest science, technology and business releases from best-selling authors, just for trying out its service. A one-month trial of Audible.co.uk costs nothing, and whatever book you choose to download is yours to keep, even if you cancel your account. Head to audible.co.uk/wired, where you can sign up in a few seconds to download any book you want. You'll be supporting Nate, Olivia, Liat, and the rest of the wired.co.uk podcast team. And you get a free book in return. Sign up easily now at audible.co.uk/wired. Thanks for supporting the show. That's audible.co.uk/wired.
Welcome back. Now, our first discussion topic for this week is Thank You Science. Now, in 2013, an extraordinary case came to light where a young girl, a baby, had supposedly been cured of HIV, and everyone got extremely excited about a new type of treatment that is delivered just after birth. But sadly, it turns out that it was a false celebration, as the child has apparently relapsed.
Yeah, this is rather sad news. It was everywhere last year. They call her the Mississippi Girl. It took place in Mississippi, obviously. But it was a very, very specific case. It was a very unusual case. The mother of the child did not know that she was infected with the virus until she was in labour. Usually she would have had antiretrovirals administered kind of before labour, during pregnancy, and they would have planned a C-section to make sure it was kind of as safe as possible, so as not to infect the child. None of this happened. So when the baby was born, the paediatric HIV specialist in charge at the hospital made a swift decision to just administer a very strong, potent dose of antiretrovirals, far more than would ordinarily be the case. And she did this within 30 hours of birth. So, you know, they just thought, okay, we're keeping it at bay as much as we can. Mother and child routinely returned to the hospital for updates, that they kept on treatment. The only reason they found this out was because at 18 months old, the mother and child disappeared, ceased treatment, and then when she returned months later, was totally HIV free. And everyone obviously was super excited and thought, you know, this child has been cured. It's not that she was immune. She had it when she was born and she's been cured. You know, they said it was proof of concept that HIV could be cured in infants. Everyone was super excited. There was even a study that was going to be launched in the US this year, and a federal study where infants would be given this strong dose after birth as a precaution. You know, so I mean, there are people known as elite controllers who are immune to HIV, and the hope was that this was not the case with her, that they could learn a lot from her, but potentially her genetics, and how she'd managed to eliminate it from her body. Now, unfortunately, a year later, this hope has been dispelled. The girl's now 4 years old, and she came in for her usual checkup a few weeks ago in July, and they found out the virus was back. So unfortunately, they've had to put her back on antiretrovirals. There were a lot of people on the fence about this. This was obviously an exciting moment, but not necessarily, you know, going to lead to the cure that everybody wants. Because in fact, in the UK, if you do have HIV, you'll be given drugs throughout your term, and they will prepare the birth. They will have a C-section planned. They'll have administered drugs beforehand and afterwards. And only in 1% of cases in the UK is HIV actually passed on from the mother to the baby. So that's kind of a remarkable statistic.
Yeah.
It's obviously not the case all over the world where they don't have the same facilities or access to drugs. You know, but that is the course of treatment now. But the hope was that we could learn a lot from how she had managed to combat it. It's quite sad, really. They're probably going to have to call off the study that was planned this year because it's such a sensitive issue, they're concerned about providing people with hope where there is none.
Yeah.
You know, they want to tread very carefully. I've spoken to people about this beforehand earlier in the year when there was this crowdfunded vaccine that came about, and people that they basically were promising this vaccine in a few short years, and there was not the science to back it up, and the academic community was kind of quite irked by this for that reason, because people are very sensitive about this. You want to engender trust in the community and make sure that they're going to come on trials, academic trials, when they begin, so that, you know, that there is that hope. So all round, not great, but there is one piece of hope, and that is that we can learn from how the virus actually came back in her body. Mm. The virus has, it basically, when it retreats in the body, has reservoirs in different areas of the body, ones in the brain, and it can remain there when it's kind of not really in remission. I guess that's how you might describe it.
Dormant.
Dormant. So this didn't show up with the girl. So they are speculating that perhaps there's more to these reservoirs than we know, or perhaps there's other reservoirs in the body, and we can try and understand where this bloody thing's hiding and why this is happening.
I think usually as well with when it comes to retrovirals, once somebody is taken off their retrovirals and they have HIV, usually the virus will show itself again within sort of 1 to 2 weeks. Like, it's a really short period of time, whereas obviously this girl was off them for ages. And it still didn't
for
show.
Years, really. I think about 2 years in
so
total.
At least, so I think there's probably something that they can learn from that as well. The fact that, you know, administering these drugs early clearly did fend the virus off and keep it dormant for longer.
Yeah.
But I think also, I've spoken to some specialists in the past before when it first happened, and they said that a lot of other babies have received this potent dose right after childbirth, and they haven't replicated these same results,
right,
you know, before this case happened. So it's possible that there is something in her genetic makeup that is, you know, that helped her fend it off in a novel way that we can potentially learn from. But yeah, because they've got a lot of sneaky ways about them.
What do
HIV virus?
It's
a lot of sneaky ways. But there is, I spoke with people earlier in the year, and they truly believe that there is hope to create a vaccine sooner than we think. There's a whole series of studies going on. They've managed to eliminate the SIV virus, which is basically the HIV equivalent in primates in a big trial in the US. And, you know, from studies like that, they're hoping to learn to kind of reverse engineer these tactics for humans.
So sad news, but there is still hope.
Yes, absolutely. No, very hopeful. If you want to see a feature on it that I wrote earlier in the year, I think it's like HIV vaccines or something, if you search for that. And it has a whole series on different research that's going on now that people are very hopeful about.
The final discussion segment this week is going to be, oh no, they didn't. I feel like we should call this section "and finally," because it's the sort of silly story at the end. And I also feel like I'm becoming, just as Liat's our resident porn expert, I'm becoming the resident lady bit expert.
We needed
not
one.
Not just because I have them, but...
she teaches us a lot.
I am yet to develop a special area of expertise.
You're just sticking at consumer tech.
I'll think of something more controversial at some point.
Well, you did write about the cat facial recognition.
I so could be cat expert.
That could be something
Nate for that one
to hone. But this story relates to an artist, a Japanese artist called Megumi Igarashi, who has been arrested for obscenity. The reason: she has been selling and distributing the 3D design files to make 3D printed models of her lady bits. Now, in Japan, according to a law dating back to 1907, it's illegal to sell or distribute obscene objects. Incidentally, I find that in itself quite extraordinary, as Japan seems to be the nation that produces the most extraordinary obscene material.
We have an obscenity law, it's for like the most obscene material that, you know, it may be dangerous or it's illegal.
But anyway, Megumi,
not vagina pictures,
she pretty much only makes artworks relating to her lady parts. It's kind of her artistic muse, if you will. She's trying to kind of break down the taboo around women's genitals, and she does this by first of all making casts of her lady bits using kind of plaster of Paris, I guess.
That Gosh, sounds uncomfortable.
How's that work?
And maybe it's she kind of she does some kind of I think it's a latex cast, and then she puts plaster in Paris in to make the models, and then but she's also done 3D scans of it. But she makes t-shirts, she's drawn cartoon characters, she's made a vagina lampshade, she's made a remote control car, phone covers, toys and games, all in either the shape of her vulva or featuring a picture of one. And in the past, she's even run a crowdfunding campaign to make a 2-meter-long canoe or kayak, I'm not actually sure what the difference is, in the shape of her manko, which is the Japanese slang for genitals, which is a word that is, I think, kind of a very strong word, that to the point where it can't be uttered on regular TV.
Like the C word.
I think it might be like that, but obviously I would love to hear from someone who speaks Japanese, because I don't. But what I find intriguing about this case is it relates to the transmission of the STEP files, STP files, that are used or could be used to create the 3D model of her vagina. So it's not a model in itself. It's not really even a kind of image that you could view that easily unless you have the right software.
So she's not even selling or distributing an obscene object. Well, not really an object.
Well, she is also doing that, and this gives you the means, the instructions.
With like the canoes?
Yeah, on all the things I mentioned, like the iPhone covers and stuff.
They didn't
like that.
Arrest her for that bit, though, did they? They for this, the distribution, like everyone can have their own canoe.
The distribution of the files. I mean, I guess it's hard because, you know, JPEGs, pictures of, you know, for example, if we're going to look at the child abuse imagery, which is illegal over here, you know, JPEGs are just data in the same way, but the difference is that everyone can open a JPEG, whereas, you know, CAD files are slightly different. But it does remind me of the case that we've talked about before, which is Cody Wilson and his 3D printed gun, the Liberator. Now, if you probably remember this, but in 2013 he made this gun and fired it, showing that you could in fact 3D print all but the firing pin of a gun, and he used a nail, I think, to make the firing pin. But then he made the 3D files available to download via his website, and more than 100,000 people downloaded them. Now, you might think, okay, it's just files, you know, no biggie. But the US Department of State suggested that the act of allowing people to download the files could mean he was in breach of firearms export regulations by transferring the technical data to a foreign person, whether in the United States or abroad.
Quite a few people did ban it elsewhere. I know, like, the Australian police actually did a demonstration to show how dangerous the produce was.
I know, they had to make it and then demonstrate it, put a video on YouTube and then say we banned it.
No, you've got to get... Well, Cody Wilson, to be fair, the first shot that they did with the gun, it exploded. Mm. And it was just that they were, you know, he trialed it with a mechanism so he didn't have to hold it. So it is highly dangerous.
And there are easier ways to make or procure a gun anyway.
Yeah, what a faff to 3D print it. But I mean, I think she is spot on doing this, because Japan obviously has a serious problem with the vulva. Vulva.
Yeah, I was.
They should hear it more. They should hear the word more. She's right.
Yeah, she says that in pop culture, the kind of the penis is more friendly and everyone's a bit more comfortable with using it. I'm not sure if that's how accurate that is, because I'm not closely enough aligned with Japanese culture. But if, again, I'd be interested to find out. She says that penises are, you know, you can utter the word on TV and there are cartoons around, but she thinks that the female genitals have more seem to be more offensive to people. And that is the case over here. You know, if we think about words that people use to describe stuff, often the female words are much stronger swear words.
Yes.
And I think that is an interesting thing that seems to apply over here too. But good on her. But you can check out the pictures of her in her vagina canoe or kayak on our website.
But there's actually, if you do want to, you know, share these more, if somebody out there has hold of these STEP files and wants to distribute them more and, you know, risk arrest, there is actually a designer in the UK from Goldsmiths College, Matthew Plummer Fernandez, who I spoke to, I think, last year. And he, off the back of all this, you know, everything in the news about Cody Wilson and also about copyright law, invented something called the disarming corruptor, which basically lets you share banned STEP files. It distorts and mutates the files so that you can't, if somebody downloaded it, you wouldn't be able to know what it was just by looking at it.
So it's kind of encryption for these files.
Exactly, yeah. You have 7 key values. Anyone that knows them can reverse the process, and you can watch your file kind of mutate back to what it is originally meant to be. He originally does this with digital artworks, but then he was like, hey, I'm going to help more people download files to make guns.
But it wasn't it about kind of, you know, maybe making a plastic copy of a Disney figurine, for example?
Yeah, that's how it was instigated.
Yeah,
because he was he basically sent off a file to be printed, I think an artwork, and it looked like Mickey Mouse, and the company sent it off with refused to print it. So he, you know, kind of along the lines of Cody Wilson, why should people control this? Why can't we all have Mickey Mouse or guns or vagina models?
Well, that's a very good question.
Who's going to patent the vagina model and make it not okay to share?
But it was her own as well.
I mean, you can't patent that. Yeah, that's. I mean, that is the human body. That is the human anatomy. It is really quite alarming that this is something that they would consider obscene. It's basically saying female sexuality is obscene.
What are your thoughts on the vagina canoe and the 3D files thereof that were being distributed? We'd be very interested if you obviously may or may not want to remain anonymous in your comments, but please let us know on podcast@wired.co.uk. So we are now about to move into the feedback loop. Now, this is where we discuss the comments and emails that we have received from you guys, often about previous episodes of this podcast.
So Jamie Hewitt Hunt has written in about a number of issues that we discussed in last week's podcast. Firstly, on Google and the right to be forgotten, he says, Google is simply providing an easy way of checking the history of a person's online records. If that person was made bankrupt 10 years ago, which shows up in Google search, then so be it. It's up to the person who is searching for the info about that person as to whether that bankruptcy is relevant or not. It's not Google's job to hide that info. Yes, I probably would agree with that, actually.
Me too.
And Jamie also says, commenting on the story about devices having to be charged when you go through the airport, this is a really interesting point that he's made. This makes total sense. I used to be in the RAF and did anti-terrorism training. This test is a very easy way of ensuring the gadget doesn't have a bomb packed into it. And all the moaning about the inconvenience of making sure it's charged is a load of nonsense. Most people use that gadget when in the airport, so it will be charged as a matter of course. People are making a mountain out of a molehill here.
Fair point.
Yeah, I agree with that too.
We were
moaning, but he makes total sense.
Yeah. And also, now that you know that that's the case, it's pretty easy to have your stuff charged up, I think.
I think the main issue, though, is what they're going to do if it's not charged up.
Yeah.
Are they going to bin your iPad? And I think that is something that probably needs to be addressed. But
yeah. We should have free charging stations all over the airport.
But take your point, Jamie. He also said that it was a top podcast and that he loved listening to us three. So we particularly Jamie.
We liked reading your comments. Thank you.
We also had a message from Lee Bennett, who's a Brit who lives in Hong Kong. And he wrote in and pointed out a mistake we made last week. It was actually, I said it. I said there was a gorilla on the front cover of the magazine when, of course, it's a chimp. It was about Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
And I feel very stupid, although I would say both are great apes. So it wasn't too much of a slip, but it was a mistake, so apologies for that. But he also wrote in about Google's right to be forgotten, and he says he's a bit conflicted. He says, personally, I'm glad Google is possibly trying to sabotage the law. I think it's stupid and sets an awful precedent. The irony of it all is that the one thing the man who brought the case to court didn't want people to find out is now the only thing people know about him. That's the Spanish guy who initially was concerned about this search result always appearing at the top of Google. He also says, I think data protection is very important, and the recent UK government's effort to collect and store data is quite scary. But if something is true when it's published, then it should be accessible. I think the idea that the original Spanish man was infringed by the offending article is absurd. Anyone looking for information on the internet about him is just lazy if they only read the first thing and nothing else. And that is the attitude that needs to be changed. Google's first page of results may not give you the full picture. Again, I'm kind of inclined to agree with Lee here. And I think that therein lies the whole issue. But I guess one problem is if you're kind of a bit older, actually the guy wasn't that old, the Spanish man.
He could work the system. And
you can game Google. You can create a website. You can talk about the positive things. But then the onus is pushed onto the individual to kind of market themselves on Google. And I guess that's not that easy for everybody. Us media types are all SEO'd up to the hilt. But
you feel like Google could have just shifted it down a few spots and this would all never have happened.
No, but everyone's still searching for the story because he's talking about it so much.
It's going to be like for the first 100 pages, not just the first result. The final piece of feedback we have is from Grant Sherson, all the way from New Zealand. He wrote in about the experiment where men were more likely to give themselves electric shocks and sit for 15 minutes bored. He says, you could look at it another way. Perhaps it is just that those who chose the shock just want to get on with things rather than sit around. I am the sort of person who would choose to build or fix something in preference to reading a book or sitting on the beach. When you look at it, who would you rather have working for you? Somebody who sits around thinking of getting things done, or someone who will get on with the job, even if they know they won't necessarily enjoy that experience? Daydreamers or workers? I would go with the workers. Now, I feel like you're saying that women just don't get the job done there because this was about men. But otherwise, yes, I agree with your point.
Oh, I don't think he was saying that at all.
I hope not. But the whole, you know, the whole point was that men were the ones who sat there and did the shocks and the women rarely did.
I think it, the thing that strikes me from that comment is that I just don't think electric shocks could be compared to working or getting something done.
Someone needs to get a new job.
Well, unless you're some kind of, I don't know what job it would be. I was going to say dominatrix, but it's the opposite of that.
They enjoy that.
The person, the recipient, if someone is paid to be the recipient of pain. Maybe
you're paid for that too.
Okay. Is that a service you offer, Liat?
Just check my website, I told you.
LiatXXX.com. I wonder if that's... someone has that website.
I've already emailed Google about it. He also said, you are one of the 20 technology podcasts I listen to keep up with this rapidly changing world. Thank you. 20. How does he keep up, Olivia?
Well, that's because he's a worker, not a daydreamer.
Yeah. He can do his work and listen to podcasts at the same time, probably.
I mean, that is extraordinary. I have about maybe 8 to 10 podcasts, but that's, I still struggle to keep up with them all.
I'm just glad we made the cut. Efficient Grant.
That's all we have time for this week, but very much look forward to being in your ears next week. Goodbye.
Bye.